Radio Entity 0212, comm check.
DPS, go. Inco, go. PUS, go. Surgeon, go. Booster, go. Copy that, we have a go from you guys.
Talking Sound. Well, hello everybody and welcome to the Talking Sound Podcast. I am Chris Jordan, your host. Please remember that the Talking Sound Podcast is now officially brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. If you're a fan of podcasting like me, have a podcast yourself, looking to start a podcast for yourself, friends, family, business, fun, whatever, stop on by PodcastCadet.com today. Use the code TALKING20. On your way out the door to save 20% off your entire purchase at PodcastCadet.com. They have some great professionals there that will walk you through the whole process from everything from the technology to distribution, monetization, experts in all of those fields that you get one-on-one consultation time with. It's great. So stop on by today, PodcastCadet.com, Talking20. Is the code that you want to use. Our guest today is a 30-year veteran of the music industry. He is the author of Surviving the Hot Seat, The Guide to Mixing Monitors for Touring Bands. Mr. Michael Babcock, welcome to the show today. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for taking the time. Just to give y'all a quick rundown, guys, I've actually got his resume right here in front of me, and let's just throw off a few names of people that you've been out there with. Joe Satriani, Billy Ray Cyrus, Lamb of God. I see some Plain White Tees, Coheed and Cambria. Yep. You have definitely run the gamut from front of house to monitors. Everything else, even Van's Warped Tour, Willie Nelson's Country Throwdown, all kinds of genres, everything from, you know, small intimate shows and tours to major arena festival stuff.
Absolutely. So
what was it that first brought you into this world? For me, it was theater. What was it that first got your bug going about audio engineering?
Well, music has always been so emotional to me. It's always been, you know, a part of who I am. I grew up like playing violin, moved to guitar. I was in several bands. And we booked a show at a little like conference hall that had nothing in it. And a friend of mine did sound and lights. So I hired him to do sound and lights for our band. Mm. It was like $350 or something like that back sure. in 1990. And I'm like, is there any way that we could knock the price down at all? He's like, yeah, if you come and help me load the van.
All right.
So, of course, I was basically, you know, a stagehand for him.
Yeah.
It knocked like $50 off the price. And the next Wednesday, I get a call from him. He's like, hey, do you want to do the same thing this weekend? Kind of snowballed from there.
Nice. Yeah. And I mean, for you, it was definitely something that you just gravitated to naturally as far as playing music. And then you just kind of stumbled into the industry itself, you know, by proxy, really. That's kind of how mine happened as well. I had spent some time in tech theater in high school, things like that, and run a little bit of sound. And then when I got to college, I had friends that did bands and stuff like that. So I just naturally went and helped them every now and then whenever I was at the bar, like, oh yeah, this is where you put that. There you go. And it evolved from there. It was really strange. It was a good friend of mine, Alan Cunningham, who heard some music of mine on the radio one day, and called up and was like, who is this? 'Cause he knew the DJ. He was like, oh, he's right here. And we started chatting, and then I went to his house and recorded, and come to find out he worked for a local company that did major tours. And yeah, I just started off helping load and unload the truck, stuff like that. So
yeah,
it's amazing how organic, and I love asking everybody's story, because most of the time it is that organic. There are a few people who, like, their dad, mom, things like that were involved in bands, but most of the time it's really something that we just kind of walk into, you know, and it's, sure. it's strange that way. Cause I get asked all the time, like, what brought you into that? And it was like, well, I built sets in theater. And then one day the sound guy didn't show up and the theater director showed me how to use the soundboard. Like that's yeah. how it started. It was literally that. so did that later lead to you going to school for audio engineering, anything like that?
I did. I was actually going to college at the time for electronics, which is a great degree.
It, it absolutely. Helps me out
on a daily basis, just understanding how things work.
Yep.
But there's another school in Madison called Madison Media Institute. It doesn't exist anymore, but they had a, it was like an 8-month recording program. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Let me go do that.
Yeah.
And so I got my degree in electronics and then jumped right into this other college. And what they taught me, I kind of already knew because I had like that real world experience already.
Sure.
It just kind of reaffirmed what I knew and kind of built on what I already knew. And I went to that college and there was one day that we had a live sound workshop. Our teacher worked for a local company, the local sound and light company, and he was the house sound guy at a local like 1500 seat club. And so we went into this club and everyone took turns, you know, mixing the band that was on stage. And it was the first time I had ever seen a monitor console.
Mm.
I had no idea that there was like another person that just did monitors. I always thought it was just two boxes from front of house.
Sure.
And instantly I went up to my professor. I'm like, have you ever had an intern? Like, can I come and do shows with you?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, absolutely. Let's do this.
Yeah, yeah, and that's just it, just kind of stepping forward. It's interesting that you bring up the fact that you didn't even know that the position of monitor engineer existed. Whenever you go to most in-house systems, things like that, like some larger venues will have a monitor engineer position, at least where whenever touring bands come in, they can patch into the main system, things like that, yep. through a Subsnake. But for them to have an actual monitor engineer in house is pretty rare. So yeah, a lot of people don't understand exactly what the position of monitor engineer is. Before we get into the authoring of your book in the hot seat, what was it that drew you to monitor engineering specifically, as opposed to, because I mean, most people more thrive to want to go to the front house spot than to the monitor engineer spot.
Well, I enjoy both. I enjoy both equally, but for, I think front of house is, it's a wonderful expression of your, like, of like your own personal artistic take on what's coming from the stage.
Absolutely.
And I think it's the people who do that so well are so talented and I have a lot of respect for them and I love doing that myself, but to be able to know that what you're doing is helping the artist personally.
Yeah.
Is so different. It's a different mindset that you have to have. It's a different attitude that you have to have completely to do monitors. And, yep. and I think some people are just, I think naturally better at doing that than others.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting that you bring that up because monitor engineering is very subjective as opposed to, I mean, as is front house engineering, everybody's got their own flavor, but you really have to assume to an extent what that musician in particular is hearing. You know, until you start working with musicians regularly on a regular basis, touring with them, things like that, and know what their taste and flavor is, your only hope is that pair of engineer's headphones that you have hanging around your neck, you know, or your reference monitor if you're lucky enough to be far enough away to have one. So it's hard because as opposed to a front house engineer, whenever he's like, I'm going to bring this snare up in the left a little bit more, he can hear that. Whenever you're bringing vocals up into that drummer's monitor, you have your reference, but you don't necessarily hear it the way he would, you know?
Yeah, that's very true. That's very, very true.
It's a totally different art form, and you really do have to learn the subtleties of the body language, things like that. Like, you can literally tell when you hit the sweet spot with some people because you'll see their whole body posture change. You know,
exactly.
Jorma Kalkinen is one of those from Hot Tuna. Like when his bass monitor hits, like you can just tell his whole playing style changes. It's absolutely amazing. And to be able to hit
just
those,
like a little smile.
Yeah.
You know, it might just be a whole, you can just see their whole body relax.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that is what translates out through the audience. You know, there's a lot of weight on a monitor engineer. Like there's a little bit of forgiveness with a front house engineer, you know, cause hey, you can only play as good as the dude. You can only play the room as good as the guy up on stage is playing, you know, you can't make him good, but it could very well be the case sometimes that if that guy isn't playing well, he may not be happy with the mix he's getting in his head, you know?
That is very true.
Which
gets to, you know, it's always our fault.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like every engineer has a backward seating chair on the bus underneath.
Right around where the wheels are.
Yeah. And it's one of those we are all literally only as good as our last gig. It's a very incestuous industry. Word gets around. And when you do a great job, word gets around. When you don't do a great job, word gets around.
Word gets around a little quicker that way.
Yeah. It actually does. And especially somebody in your world, once you step into the world of festival touring, once you step into the world of touring with major label bands, you know, frequently you will be working with numerous bands from the same label, things like that. So,
definitely same management.
Yeah, precisely. And what has that been like for you to kind of migrate yourself from that house engineer into the literal touring beast that you have become now?
I appreciate the beast part. That's a good question. The company I was working for, we were already doing big festivals. And so I would see 10 bands on my stage 3 days a week. So I had already kind of gotten a flavor of what it was like to get like just the fast paced. Mm. Oh, we got 30 minutes, a whole new band. Yep. Oh, you need something completely different than the last band.
Yeah. Yeah. And completely different patch points, completely different instruments, completely different mixes coming through. You know, like at least in front house, you can have a little bit of persuasion in the board from band to band, you know? Like,
yeah,
this is somewhat where I'm going to leave things, and whenever I come back, it's not zeroed out. But as a monitor engineer,
snare drum is a snare drum. That channel is snare drum all day long.
Yeah, exactly. As a monitor engineer, you know, that mix is probably going to be pretty close to zeroed out in between bands whenever you go up to change things out.
I found the vocals would stay about the same and just everything else changed. Mm,
yeah, because of stage volume.
Like nice and loud up front.
Yep.
And in the side fills without feedback. The first band was happy. Usually it was like, oh no, that's good. Let's start with that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You got a bass pattern there to start off with. And that can make things a little bit easier, but it's definitely a lot harder whenever you're in that festival mode. And like you said, you got 10 bands on your stage all day. Fortunately, if it's the same bands day in, day out, at least you can have a scene changed. or saved, things like that nowadays. You know, yeah. You can at least have a really good base set to start off with. And
absolutely.
What has that world been like for you to really see change, to see that dynamic change from analog to digital in the world of live performance like that?
Well, for monitors, it's been really a positive change.
Okay.
And by that, I mean, front of house is left and right.
Mm.
And maybe a couple fills here and there. So you don't have a whole lot of outputs. In monitors, you can have 20, 30, 40 different outputs.
Yep.
If you walk up on an analog console, you have to remember 48 inputs and 40 outputs by memory.
Yep.
And pre-dial it up. With digital, you just hit recall.
Yeah.
And everything, all of your little subtleties that you have are already there.
Yeah.
So digital has been a godsend, but I believe that, you know, since I grew up in analog, you know, I come from that world where I still think analog in a digital world.
Yeah. Do you find that that constricts you sometimes, or do you find that it's more freeing for you to think analog in a digital world?
Well, when I say that, I also mean I don't like using a whole lot of plugins.
Yeah.
I just don't like it. I want things as natural as they possibly can.
Yep.
And so that's kind of my analog thinking. But living in a digital world, you know that there is a possibility I can take this thing, this little piece of software, and add it into a chain. And it might help.
Yeah.
It might get this artist exactly what he needs.
Yeah. You could put spatial expansion on there and kind of pop the vocals out front in front of things, all kinds of stuff.
Even a little touch of distortion just to make it sound a little more analog.
Well, and especially nowadays, whenever you're dealing much more with the in-ear world than you are necessarily with full on stage fill, you know? So many more people are starting to go to the private in-ear monitors. Of course, there's still the stage fill and stuff like that, but to be able to add those things into somebody's monitor mix that's using an in-ear, I could see how that could absolutely change things quite a bit. But I very much am like you. I still think analog in a digital world, even in my home console. Like if my camera was on over here, you'd see like my whole rig at home is nothing but patch bays. I have a digital interface that's stereo in, like that's what I got. Even my recording program, I use it like a really big four track. I don't mix in the box. I don't use a lot of plugins in the box for compression and stuff like that. It's just not how I mix. It's not how I mixed live. It's not how I mix in the studio. So, for me, it was always, like you were saying, trying to keep things as clean as possible, even as a front house engineer. So
yeah.
Not putting like, okay, I've got four compressors in my rig. Where do I put them? As opposed to now where it's like, I can put a compression on every instrument and one on the mix. And I could walk away.
Three on one vocal.
I could just do auto mix for the night and be done on vocals. I think it's been interesting to see kind of the arc to have stepped back from my position as full on audio engineer and go to video and kind of see that arc happen from a slight distance. And then jump back into it. It's been interesting for me, but for someone like you who has been knee deep in it the whole time, like we were saying before the show, there is such an arc of keeping up with technology.
Yes.
How has the recent literal industry shutdown affected that for you?
Well, I think it's a lot of it is like riding a bike. It's going to be getting right back onto it. Sure. Going. And the band that I work with, I have a show file that works. on a system that I toured with before. So it's just going to, that's going to be at least recalling a scene that I know works. But to get back into the mindset of it after taking however many months we're taking off.
Yeah.
Who knows how long this is going to keep going. Hopefully we'll be back in July.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah. I've seen quite a few of my shows that were canceled coming back up in August, September, things like that. So, and that's just when they'd be able to get hotels for the conferences. So it's, we're definitely going to be coming out of it, but yeah, like you say, it's a little bit different trying to get back into the mindset. Cause like we were saying pre-interview, like, has your wife gotten to the point where she's tired of you yet? where she's like, so when are you leaving?
Exactly.
Every couple days I take care of the kid and I just tell my wife, like, go out for a drive for a couple hours. Just go out on a country road, go for a drive for like 30 minutes one way and come on back. Just go and get away. Cause we all need that, you know, even when you're on the road. What was probably for you the biggest change of mentality once you started being on the road 24/7?
It made me realize why a lot of people can't do this.
Mm.
Why there's normal people and then there's us.
Yeah.
And I knew I was part of us.
Yeah. You really do have to be a special kind of crazy.
Yes.
To want to live in close quarters with like 10 people on a bus for 10
that you've never met before,
10 weeks at a time, you know, things like that. It really is strange. And a lot of my road work here as of late, where I'm on the road like 35 weeks a year, typically, like it's been strange to kind of get into that reflex, you know, and really like we were saying, be that concierge as opposed to, being the guy in charge of just one thing. You're in charge of numerous things that all have to go right. And it's a different mentality. You really do have to be a little bit more on your game, whenever you're doing it.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to have that big of an issue like coming back into it.
Yeah.
Because typically we all have a couple months off in a row. Sure. Every year. You know, from December is usually pretty slow. January is almost always dead. February is usually pretty slow. So we already have like 2 or 3 months off every year.
Yeah.
It's just extended this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to keep a positive attitude about everything.
Same.
You know, I told a friend of mine yesterday, I'm like, well, I went from boredom to mad about being bored to just plain boredom again.
Maybe in another week or so, there will be rage boredom and then it'll swing right back to boredom, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been telling people, I have just been knocking projects off my list that I come up with while I'm on the road and never get a chance to do. So it's like, ooh, man, I can do all that server maintenance on my websites and stuff like that that I've just been wanting to do and can't do from 10 a.m. or 10 p.m. to midnight when I'm on the road.
That reminds me, my website's about 10 years old.
But I do love the website, actually. Let's chat about that for a minute, because it is Welcome to Monitor World. That is themonitorguy.com.
Yep.
What was it that really was the inspiration for not only this, but your book, Surviving the Hot Seat?
Well, I'd say probably about 2001, 2002. It was right before I started really touring.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine pulled me off to his side, you know, in the industry. He's like, you're so good at monitors. Why do you want to do front of house? And it actually made me think a lot about that. Like that one question I still think about to this day. And it really kind of, just that assertion from, you know, a fellow industry person saying, you're really good at this. You should just be this guy.
Yeah.
And I think the next day I saw that themonitorguy.com was available, so I grabbed it.
Nice. Smart man. And, you know, because it really is a specialty, and not everybody has an ear for it. More than that, not everybody has the patience for it. You know, here in the last year, I have started providing some tidbits of labor around town in the corporate realm. And one of the hats that I've had to find people to wear was production manager. Being there to be a technical director on site, you know, and to find people that are not only a Swiss Army knife and know a little bit about lighting and audio and video and, you know how to integrate that, but can also be client facing, be able to deal with the heat, you know, like you're saying, being in the hot seat, being the one that's directly answerable to the client. Like, I don't care what other position is there on site. You are within bottle throwing distance as a monitor engineer.
Guitar throwing, exactly.
Like, you could be hit in the eye with a drumstick in a heartbeat, buddy. and a good drummer could do it.
Drummer has perfect aim.
That's right. and you know, it is the hot seat. It's hard, and to find somebody that wants to wear that technical director hat, is hard. You know, people are like, oh man, you know, you want a sound guy, I'm your guy, you know, but I don't want to wear that hat. And it's kind of
the other way. You need a technical director, call me.
All right. Nice.
Literally.
All right. Yeah. And see, that's the thing. Like, I got one of my guys and I was like, I think you may like it. He's like, man, I don't know. And I was like, dude, trust me. I know you've called cameras and things like that before. Go give it a shot. And he called me up that night after the show and he was like, yeah, man, that was pretty cool. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, see, there are some people that are just built for it. And like your buddy was telling you, like, you're built for this. Why would you want to go into the fray of everybody that wants to go be front house when you excel at this, specialize in it, you know, be proud of that, because it is a skill that not everybody has.
Yeah, and I'm hoping the book helps people.
Yeah.
If you want to get into the book a little bit.
Absolutely, let's.
I noticed that there's 100 books out there on system design.
Mm.
There's 100 books out there how to make front of house, how to make that kick drum sound good. There's not a single book out there that talks about the psychology of dealing with the artist.
Exactly.
And while my book does get into some technical things, the majority of it is about attitude. It's about how to talk to people, how to interpret things.
Yep.
How to read body language from someone who can't signal you with their hands or feet.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And to know that somebody has gone through, like I said, I got my copy, on Kindle and have been reading it over the last few days, since we first chatted, and I've absolutely loved it because it really is much more of a psychological guide. And that it's interesting to, because half of what we do as engineers, be it audio, video, lighting, whatever, it's coaxing egos. Whether it's dealing with the talent on stage or whether it's dealing with your local crew or your local leads, in your union house, what have you, it is literally people handling skills that are necessary. You could be the best technical dude on the floor, but if you ain't got people skills, good luck, man.
I grew up like the quietest person ever. Like, having a normal conversation is, even to this day, is tough. Like, there's some people where it's instant, like, oh yeah, we can talk about everything
sure.
from the second we meet. But other people, it's like, it's a struggle to say, how's the weather?
Yeah.
So, and the fact that this is such a mission that relies on communication, and it's weird that I'm good at it.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I was very much the same way as a kid. Once I get confident in something, I'll sit back and talk about that topic all day long with anybody. Yeah. But to strike up a conversation with a stranger is different. But I will sit and listen to a stranger all day long. And I think that's really the most important part there, is the listening. And the fact that you were able to listen and process and actually empathically care about what somebody's saying. You know, there's a difference between, like, listening and hearing, let's say. you can listen to somebody talk, but did you hear what they actually said?
That's right.
You know, and the hearing what they said is what comes down to the body language. It's what comes down to the inflection, the tone, things like that. And that's what being quiet and still is most important about. And whenever you're talking about monitors and dealing with that psychology, it is more important for you to be quiet and listen.
Yeah.
The last thing you want to do is start telling the artist on stage how the sausage is made.
Well, the last thing you ever want to do, for sure, is tell the artist on stage how it's supposed to sound.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. and the psychology of this is really interesting. I loved the fact that this was a human technical manual, not a gear technical manual. How have you seen these principles applied in the real world? Let's get into a couple of them real quick for the audience.
Sure. Which principles are we talking about?
Just the principles of people handling, you know, the people handling skills, the listening, things like that.
Well, yeah, it's absolutely key to the position. If you go and start telling the artist how it's supposed to sound, you're not the one that wrote the song. You're not the one up there playing that song. That person knows how it's supposed to sound. You need to understand where their mind is. You need to get into their head. Okay. Now I see why you want that kick drum to sound like a snare, and why you want that bass to sound all low endy or mid rangey. You know, you have to kind of separate yourself. Like when you're doing front of house, you're like, oh, that doesn't sound right. Let's fix it. When you're at monitors, you can think that doesn't sound right, but maybe it sounds right to that person.
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. Cause you don't have that person's ears, you know, like we were saying, the only hope you actually have as a monitor engineer is your headphones. Aside from that, it's listening to the musician and trying to achieve what they're looking for. And really learning to interpret that. Because, you know, one of my favorites was a reggae band that I used to work with that was more crisp on the lips. More crisp on the lips. And that was like, give me more mids. It took many, many gigs for us to get that square between each other. But once we did, Michael, boy, howdy, the gigs raged. It was great. But it was literally learning different terminologies that they had for things, the different ways that they referred to stuff, you know.
It took me forever to figure out the colors.
Yeah.
The colors of audio.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah.
But like when someone says, hey, it sounds too red. Well, what are they saying? It sounds too, like that vocal, that range, Yeah. Oh, it sounds too green. Okay, it's a little bit higher. Oh, it's way too blue. Ooh. It's like a lower frequency.
Mm.
they're kind of, they're just using a color because it kind of sounds like the frequency.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talking about, even though they don't understand the frequency that they're talking about.
Yeah. They aren't going to tell you, I think there's something over there in the 80K. It just sounds too low right now. And really, like you said, learning those subtleties and learning to listen to people and pay attention is really, really a key part of the monitor engineer's job specifically. And when, like we said earlier, when the monitor engineer is not being effective and proper with things, it can really chain reaction a show straight up from the get-go.
Yep.
Now, since writing the book, have there been things that you have come across where you've kind of built upon these principles, or are we looking at a companion to this, anything like that?
There'll be a second edition.
Okay.
I'm through about three chapters of sort of rewriting.
All right.
But just adding to what's there. I added a chapter on finances.
Ooh.
Because I think a lot of people just don't learn that when they're young.
Yeah.
You know, there's pretty much four ways that you can get paid in the industry. As an employee, as a self-contractor, as an LLC, or as an S-corp. What's the advantages? What's the disadvantages to each? That's where I'm going with this chapter.
Absolutely. I could not agree more with anything that I've heard in quite a while on this show. That is one of the most important things to really figure out for yourself financially, is how you're going to go about tackling your career as basically a self-employed person, you know? Yeah. Because even like most of the time you're going to be 1099. It's pretty rare as a touring person that you're going to be W-2 with somebody, you know?
I typically try to keep it around 50-50.
Yeah.
If I have a choice, I'll make a choice. All right. I've already had three clients over 1099 this year. I need a W-2.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And specifically for situations like what's going on right now. Where you can lean on that and lean on the good bit of work that you did in that area and kind of stockpiled that in a separate account that's there for you. I very much do the same thing. And yeah, it is something that whenever people are starting out in the industry, I'm actively trying to write a corporate AV curriculum, because it just blows my mind that nobody at any audio school out there tells these kids that this field exists. And it's right there in your backyard. Like, good money. It's not rock and roll. Granted, it's not working in a studio. Granted. But you get to make nice, clean corporate money from like 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. and go out and run rock and roll all night. and you get to flex your skills on the daily, you know?
Yeah.
It's a really in need industry and in need of good people. And it's really funny that it's a side that most people don't even think of, you know? And what do you do financially? How do you set yourself up for having as many ways to apply your trade as possible?
Well, like I mentioned, I always try to do like 50-50, 1099 or W-2. I'm after talking to some friends, I'm now looking into doing an S-corp.
Mm.
Because there's certain advantages there.
Sure. Yeah.
Where, and you're a corporation.
Yep.
So you are very much like Small Business Association. Like all the SBA loans are set aside for
wide open for you. I can honestly say that when my son was born right at 3 years ago, as soon as my wife was out of anesthesia and everything, I held him up and looked at her and went, "We go LLC next month." and what a blessing to have that at this moment where, yeah, I can go and apply for loans like that. I can go and get that kind of help. It's so much easier for you to go out and get gig insurance, you know, that kind of stuff to be able to get riders, insurance riders, that kind of stuff, like $2 million worth of coverage. It's a whole lot easier than when you're a DBA, you know, doing business as, or when you just walk in as a Joe off the street and go, I want to put on a show. I need $2 million of insurance coverage.
Yeah.
They look at you a little bit different. Let's just say that way.
Even as an independent contractor, am I going to be able to write a contract for my services?
Yeah.
Every management company is going to laugh at that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, as an S-Corp, you are hiring this corporation to do this job.
Exactly.
Here are the parameters. You know, you can make it more business.
Yeah, you do have a little bit more leverage for negotiation, most definitely. And, you know, I think that really comes down to the point of this industry is so very much Fight Club. It really is. You choose your level of involvement, you know. Yeah. And when you make that, I remember the day that I got business cards. Was the day that I stopped drinking at bars whenever I would run sound.
Yeah.
Like I'd have a drink or two whenever things were done while I was cleaning up.
Mm-hmm.
But, I did not drink from that point on. The day I got a business card and told people I was out recording shows and stuff like that, it was like, nope, I don't drink behind the board anymore.
Right. It's not a good idea to do anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, not that I ever like was the dude that like worked for a $50 bar tab, but I definitely had a couple of drinks here and there, and it was one of those like, wow, you know, yeah, I'm respecting myself in a different way. I'm looking at myself a different way, and when you do that, people tend to do that.
I have a funny story about that.
Oh, please!
It kind of goes against what I just said.
Go ahead and then I'll share one.
I was out with this band recently, and I asked the guitar player, I'm like, hey, how's everything going? And he's like, not good. I'm like, oh, what's going on? He hands me a beer and he's like, open that. I opened it. He's like, have a drink. All right, now things are great.
All right.
So he just wanted me to be a part of like his,
just a part of his world for a little while.
His world, like, totally. Why aren't you drinking over there? Is something wrong?
Yeah, why aren't you over there having fun? that's really interesting, because I had that happen numerous times where bands would take a toast to the post, you know, at set break, and they'd buy me one, and I'd be like, you know what's happening with that? They're like, yeah, I hold that for him in the fridge. Yeah, like as it come the end of the night, I'd go over and take a shot with them, but I'm not going to do that right now. Like, you can buy it for me, and I'll hold it up, and we'll all ahayim and prost, and I'll give it right back to the bartender, and I'll come back and drink that in a couple hours, fellas. So it was very much the same thing. I tell people all the time, I hustled my way into being a show lead in the corporate world because I just showed up like 40 minutes early with a Pelican and a jacket on. People just assumed that I was somebody in charge cause I was there when they showed up. you know,
and if you're on time, you're late.
That's right. Exactly. 8 o'clock call is when we start working, not when we show up. So I'm really going that extra step, you know, and making sure that you're doing your own quality control, making sure that you present yourself in the most professional light possible. And like you said, going that LLC, S-Corp route, C-Corp, anything like that, it really can make a big difference in the level of gigs that you start to get.
Yeah, for sure.
It really is a rung bumper, to say it in a true way. It moves you up into another realm. People look at you a different way. Now, for all those engineers out there that are just getting started, just getting into this right now, what advice would you have for them as someone who is road worn like you are, battle scars from years of being behind the board, being on stage, being on tour, things like that. What would be a couple of pieces of advice that you have for those up and coming?
First advice is have a backup skill. I mean, I say it jokingly, but
no, absolutely.
If I had a backup skill, I could go do it right now.
That's it.
I wouldn't be sitting on my ass like,
yeah,
feeling useless that I can't do anything to help the situation right now.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, have a backup skill.
Mm.
Like, even if it's driving for Uber or Lyft or anything.
Yeah.
Just have a backup skill.
Yeah.
Like, we all have, like I said earlier,
even if it's maintaining
3 months off a year.
Even if it's maintaining a CDL, you know?
Yeah.
To go out and drive delivery trucks locally, stuff like that. You know, something utterly useful on the road. But, yeah, I thank God every day that I code my own websites. I do all that stuff, that I do video production. I do online production and web streaming. And, you know, I am a very bendy individual when it comes that route. So I've fortunately been able to take some of my labor force and kind of bend them as well, where it's like, hey guys, you know MailChimp because you got a pretty successful band and like 300 people on your mailing list that you talk to every week. This business over here needs somebody to manage their mailing list and do a newsletter once a week. You know, and just kind of making it to where it's like, hey, we can still keep something coming to you in trickles right now while things are happening. And then once the industry kicks back up, you can still maintain those people's email list. Like, you got saleable skills in the digital world. You just gotta like really rethink how you're applying them. You know, like this is something that you always considered a woe is me for your band that you had to do, but now it's actually a skill that you can get paid for. You know,
absolutely.
You just gotta flip that mentality and really, really look at it from a different facet and a different angle. But my God, have a backup skill.
Yeah, and I don't want that to sound like I'm sitting here, woe is me, I can't do anything. Like, I could go out and stock shelves.
Sure.
Like, I could do that in a second.
Well,
I'm waiting for the industry to come back, because I understand from doing this for so long that we have a couple months off a year.
Yeah.
So I always budget myself to be able to live for 6 months off of what I have in my accounts.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of people do that.
No, a lot of people don't. A whole lot of people don't. And unfortunately, I think most of those people, Michael, are unfortunately the guys that are willing to go out and run sound for a bar tab. They are unfortunately the ones that go out and run sound 3-4 nights a week to make like 50-60 bucks a night, you know? And it was a really hard turn for me mentally, to stop doing that, you know? Because it was really one of those, like, I am actively devaluing myself. Mm-hmm. To go out and work for $75 a night, 50 bucks a night, when I'm there from like 5 p.m. until 2 a.m. I may as well have gone out and said, welcome to Walmart. No offense to anybody that does that. It's a great job. But this is skilled labor, you know? And
it is, but that's also what I kind of call... That's... Oh, I'm losing my... my words here. You're building yourself.
Sure.
You're going through the slums of the industry.
Oh, we've all gone through the slums of the industry, absolutely. But we all also know that guy that should have left the slums of the industry a long time ago and just didn't.
Yeah, the lifetime house guy.
You know, and it's like, man, you're worth so much more. And you need to be ready to move to that step. A lot of people don't want to, you know, even as someone that provides labor, like I said, to find someone that wants to wear a technical director's hat. Most people want to pass on it. I got a guy that here in town that used to own an AV company. All he wants to do is come set up and tear down. He doesn't even like, he used to run visuals for the Butthole Surfers. Mm-hmm. He's like, nope. Like, I'd much rather just come in and set up and tear down and leave, not be that guy that sees the one line of video on screen and am I the only one that saw that? And then you're waiting for it again all week.
Right.
You know? He's like, I get that. He's like, I'm done with that. I'm done with that. I'd much rather just come in, do my thing, have fun, take off. And I know plenty of people like that, that have just pushed boxes for 20 years and they are happy pushing boxes and getting t-shirts, you know? And more power to them. Go for it, man. Whatever path in the industry you want to take, do it. They're all wide open. That's what's so great about this industry. It really is it's an open path. It can be a little tough sometimes to kind of find the way in, but once you're in there, like, it's a playground. You really do have opportunity to really explore and build skill sets and become a Swiss Army knife of an engineer.
Yeah, that's another good piece of advice is don't turn down any gig.
Yeah.
Like when you're first starting out, if you're a younger engineer or whatever,
do it.
If someone says, hey, can you do lights? Don't say, no, I'm an audio guy. Just go do lights.
Yeah.
Learn it.
Yep.
If the video guy wants to teach you how to plug in the switcher, learn it.
Yeah. No,
the more you know, the better you are as a human.
Yes. Absolutely. Exactly. I tell people all the time, I've been doing this for 20, 30 years of my life almost. If I don't learn something or a new way to do something every day on the job, I consider my day, it was well spent. But did I really get anything out of it? Like, I'm always trying to find some new workaround, something, you know. Prime example of that, a good friend of mine, Wesley Goins. He used to be my bandmate, great audio engineer, knew nothing about video, man. Like, maybe how to hook up like your laptop to a projector.
Right.
All right. We were in the car one day and a buddy of his that was a stunt man on a pirate show that he used to work on called up and was like, hey man, I got this job with the Marvel Universe, directing their new stunt show. He was like, they're looking for a video engineer. He's like, man, I'm not a video engineer. He's like, dude, they're building this system from the ground up, man. Like, all new stuff. So they're going to teach you everything. He gets off the phone. He's like, I don't know. I'm like, dude, you should, at the very least, take a couple days, go to Florida, relax, enjoy it, go for an interview, come back. You don't get it, you don't get it. But if you do, they're going to be teaching you everything about this rig. Like, this rig is custom made for this show. It does not exist anywhere else.
Right.
You know, and once you're done, you'll be one of the only D3 programmers in North America. Like, that's crazy. Like, you'd be able to name your price, and you're not even 30 years old yet. 5 years later, he is now the head of projection for PRG. Runs their warehouse, maintains all their stock and projectors and everything else. Like, knew nothing about projection. And 5 years later, bam, because he decided to turn and go check that out. So you never know where you're going to end up in this industry, you know? Like, it's pretty wild. It's great. It's a fun ride once you get in there. Thank you so much for taking the time with our audience today, Mike. It has been an absolute pleasure having you on. I'd love to have you back on here and there, especially whenever you're out on the road again, things like that, just kind of a road check-in. And,
yeah, for sure.
You know, I think that'd be super fun for the audience just to kind of hear every once in a while from the life of a touring engineer what it's like out on the road right now. Also, updates on your book whenever the book is coming out in its second format and whatever you're writing. You are always more than welcome on the show to come on and shamelessly self-promote anytime.
I never, ever, ever would have thought I was going to be an author. But once I sat down and started writing, it happened so quick.
And that's how you know it comes from true passion, my friend, is that it doesn't seem like work. It just happens. It just manifests itself.
I would sit down with a drink and start typing. The next morning, I'd erase the drunk parts.
Uh huh.
And 2 weeks later, I had a book.
Yeah. No. Exactly. Exactly. And like I said, such a great book. Such a deep dive into the actual mentality and mindset of doing the job of a monitor engineer.
I kind of sat down going, all right, how would I teach myself how to do this?
Mm.
And just, how I wrote it. So it's kind of me talking to me.
Well, and it really comes across that way. It is very personalized in the way that it's written. It's
like old me talking to young me.
Yeah, it's really great. It's a good read. It's $20 in paperback. $0 if you have Kindle Unlimited, folks, me. If you do enough I buy enough electronic DIY books and things like that, that it's just worth it for me to pay $10 a month. The rate at which I buy guest books and things like that for my podcasts, it's like, I may as well just pay the $10 a month and just get them all. And this was one that when I saw it, I want to say it was a friend of mine, John Butler, that recommended me look you up. And he was like, have you ever heard of this guy? And I was like, I don't know. And he's like, you should check out this book. It's really cool. I think you should have him on your show to talk about it. And I was like, okay. And I went and I got it. And I was like, this is a really cool book. I do want to have this guy on my show to talk about it. So
I'd love to sell a million copies like right now.
Well, I'll help you sell. I'll help you sell your first 10. How about that?
It's a labor of love. Like, I wrote it to give back to the industry that had given me so much for so many years.
And what a beautiful concept, because that's really why I started this show, was to pay it forward, and kind of show people like, look, we seem like people that are untouchable whenever you look behind that curtain and see us. You know, I tell people all the time, if you see me move, something went horribly awry. if you see that dude in black move, like, look over your head, make sure everything's good.
I'm the pyro guy. If you see me running, follow closely.
That's right. Exactly. Follow closely and at speed. Something's going down. And it's one of those like, wow, how do I get into that? And most people don't realize, like, we're just regular dudes, man. Most of us, like you were saying, just stumbled into this through asking a dumb question. Like, hey, man, how can I get this done cheaper? Come help me load the truck. Okay.
Yeah.
And look at where you are now.
It was literally me hanging out with a buddy of mine, like helping him move some cabinets into a van.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The most innocuous ways lead to these amazing paths of journey in this industry. And it's really interesting. That's why I started this show, was to really kind of expose that and to shed light on it and let people know, if this is something you're thinking about doing, give it a shot, man. Go for it.
Yeah,
you may find the passion of your life in this.
I'm kind of writing a second book, but it's not for industry people. It's for non-industry people. It's pretty much how to be a roadie.
Oh, great. Well, definitely got to have you on to talk about that. So, yeah. Keep in touch. Thank you so much for coming on. Tell everybody where they can go to follow your blog, where they can go to check out Monitor World, where they can go to get your book, everything else, Mike.
Well, the book is, I published it just on Amazon. It's just on Amazon. Look up Surviving the Hot Seat. It'll pop right up. I have a website. It's themonitorguy.com. I haven't touched it in about 10 years. So it's pretty boring. But if you're into really boring stuff, hey, there it is.
The resume in and of itself is worth a read. Because, wow, the list goes on and on. But it's been great talking with you. It's been great spending some time today. Thank you so much for spending the time with the audience. Please do hold the line while we close things out. While you're online checking out themonitorguy.com, as well as heading over to Amazon and other places to buy your copy of Surviving the Hot Seat, the guide to mixing monitors for touring bands by our guest Michael Babcock, make sure to stop on by talkingsoundshow.com. That is where you can get all the great stuff. We're getting ready to revamp a couple things. Our video page is going to have all kinds of tech videos, all kinds of great stuff. We've got our CES coverage going up right now. We've got our freelance AV directory that actively is a directory of companies around the country. Right now, Texas is pretty populated because I live there. But if you live somewhere else and want to pay it forward, folks, get in touch with us. Let us know the companies around your area that hire freelance AV techs, and we will post them on here for free. So if you're out there in the Texas area right now and you're looking for gigs, check these things out. If anything, it is a place to go and put in resumes for whenever things get going again. Once again, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. As always, take care of yourselves. Take care of your hearing. And until next time, keep reaching for 11. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
This is Talking Sound.